Welcome to My Big Safety Challenge, a podcast all about stories of safety leadership, presented by Dale Carnegie and the Board of Certified Safety Professionals.
John, one of the great things about doing these podcasts is we are able to talk to a variety of different people from across the country, around the world, who have lived and had experiences in working with people and working with safety. And it is an education in itself to be able to talk with these folks. And someone that you know well is going to help contribute to that today.
Yeah, no, and I'm excited about that. And I'd like to welcome Elena Ziegler from Lewis Tree. She's their vice president of safety and human performance. And so really looking forward to this discussion. I think she's going to bring some things that aren't normally on the tip of our tongue that we can get into with her. It's going to be great.
Elena, would you just get started? Tell us just a little bit about yourself, your background, and just who are you?
Yeah, thanks. First off, thanks for inviting me. It's an honor to be here and being part of this discussion. But yep, my name is Elena Ziegler, and I've been in safety for about 20 years now. I've had the pleasure of working in a variety of industries. I started out in the utility business, and then I transitioned to a service company for the utility, which led into some heavy construction work, some nuclear work, and then I got in some decon demolition, some heavy construction, and manufacturing. So I've been fortunate to have some exposure in a variety of industries, and currently I'm with Lewis Services. We are a vegetation management company, and we help utilities maintain their distribution and transmission lines, as well as doing some other things around some solar fields maintaining and some other fun, exciting things with climbing in trees. It's been a world of fun since I've been with Lewis. I'm from originally Southwest Pennsylvania, and now I'm in Toledo, Ohio.
Now, you probably need to educate at least me a little bit. Vegetation management. Could you just tell us a little bit of what that is?
Yeah, we are tree artists, as I like to say, in the simplest form. But what we do is we have professionals out in the field, and Lewis services pretty much the eastern part of the United States and a few others. We're in about 31 states, and we go out with for our utility partners. And when you're driving down the road and you see distribution lines and you have trees that look like donuts, that's us. Our professionals go up in trucks, in bucket trucks, as well as climbing. They climb up in the trees, and we are maintaining that perimeter around those utility and transmission lines so that when there's storms, hopefully people's power doesn't go out due to some of that trees and branches and such coming down on the lines. That's the simplest form of it, but they're out there doing some exciting things.
I'd like to explore that with you. I think it's very unique, you know, for folks that aren't familiar with the type of work, the tree artist work that gets done, it's very dynamic. And so there's a lot of folks listening to the podcast. And as we look at the workforce and the shift in workforce and more contractor spend and maybe some temporary worker spend, and, you know, talk to me a little bit about, you know, coming from a utility background and, you know, for the purpose of the listeners, many of the folks are tenured in this space, and where you're moving is where individuals may not have that tenure, or there may be language barriers, or there could be training barriers. And so you don't have the fortune of 10 years of training under your belt as you're approaching these jobs. You might have 10 minutes of training. And so talk a little bit about that transition and how you've kind of approached that in this role that you have today.
Yeah, so in the role today, coming into this industry, I was thinking about it's a diverse workforce, a dispersed workforce as well. And so how do you handle that? And I'll be honest, I was a little naive coming into it, thinking there was a lot of easy little things that we could do that would make big impacts. And I'm not saying there's not. But to your point, our company is an employee-owned company, and we're minority-owned, which also drives the flags of different language barriers that we run into. It's not just a Spanish language barrier, but we also have a lot of Creole-speaking individuals within our organization. So we run into language barriers, on a day-to-day work front basis, as well as training and making sure that that goes, the messages get across in the right way. And that's not just from a verbal standpoint, but a documented standpoint as well. Everybody is in so many different locations, and that's been a big change. We have a lot of opportunities to get messages out, but finding out really what resonates with our employees and for absorbing that communication has been interesting. We've opened up a lot of different methods. We're using text messages to individuals with videos attached to them. We're opening up different types of, we have iPads on our trucks, on all of our trucks, as well as our crew leaders and our leadership have cell phones. So pushing messages out in that manner as well. It's really coming from all angles to try and get messages and points across to ensure that our employees are trained. As you mentioned, sometimes it's 10 minutes. We try not to make things 10 minutes. We try and make sure that we allot enough time so that we can get full messages across and ensure the employees really understand what's going on and expectations.
Well, you've really then sounds like you're being innovative in saying we have this situation that we need to get word out to people, and we're different languages, different locations. How could we do it? And so you looked by using technology how to do that. And if you could give a word of encouragement for somebody else that's listening to this and they're saying, I'm pulling my hair out. I don't know what to do. I'm a little daunted by technology even. Is there any just a tip or two broad generalization that you could give to help people being willing to step in, jump on in and go after it?
Don't be afraid. Technology can be our friend, and it's jump on the train or not. So don't be afraid and go for it for the technology standpoint. And I think a key with that is knowing what your employees are asking for. So really reaching out to your employees and saying, here's this technology piece. How do we get you bought into using it? Going to those most difficult individuals, maybe they're a little older in age and not as comfortable with technology. And it's pairing them up with somebody, speaking directly to them to understand how we can make the technology as easy for them to use as possible. Don't be afraid, but your winner there is talking to your employees and understanding what's holding them back from utilizing it.
Solid insight right there, John, for folks. Rather than just sitting in the ivory palace of the office and saying, this is what I think, sounds like you folks said, let's talk to the people. Find out what they believe they want and need. I see on your expression on your face, that's accurate.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's from our top down. Our CEO of our organization, Leslie Cass, is out in the field continuously. I've not met somebody in my career with her position that is out speaking to our ground workers as much as she is and driving those conversations and bringing back, here's what they're saying. What are we going to do about it? So I've been so fortunate to be able to work for Leslie within her organization and to not just partner with her, but learn from her as well. But it is top down. It's understanding what our employees in the field are asking and needing for us to be successful.
Yeah. And so what I would say is, as we think about that, I think one of the things that you and I kind of are lined up on is this idea of taking the time to understand the why. So why are we having this result A? Why are we having result B? Why is the technology working? Why is it not working? And so as you are exploring that, and having a supportive CEO is a big deal. Talk a little bit about understanding the why and the how that might frame or cultivate your approach.
Going into a new project, whether it's technology, it's a new training opportunity, understanding what our employees are asking for is we're going to have the buy-in with it. The safety organization at Lewis right now is a growing organization. And that's one of the messages that we're pushing completely across the safety organization and our company is understanding that why. With our workforce being so spread out, if we don't thoroughly understand the pains that are going on for our employees, the frustrations, if we don't understand how to fix those for them, we're not going to get better. We're not going to gain anything. So many times when we're out in the field or when there's an unfortunate incident and you start talking to the individuals involved and you ask them, if you just went up and asked to them, why did you decide to make that decision? Why did you turn right when you should have turned left? You're cutting off that communication and that learning opportunity. Lewis strives to be that learning organization, and we are. The key with that is taking actions out of what you have learned. And that understanding why the employee chose to turn right is so important. And most of that is around the context. A lot of times we don't look at the context around situations, whether it's why the person is frustrated with the iPad. We have all these great tools for you. Why are you not using it? And then understanding the context around it. Maybe they're new and no one's told them how to get into the application. Maybe they've been here, but they were off for the holiday and they can't get their password reset. So if we're coming to them and saying, why haven't you done some of your computer-based training? Well, the context isn't that they've just blown it off. There's some understanding of why they didn't do it. And it's because we couldn't get a password change for them in a sensible amount of time. So whether it's that or understanding that we may have set up the employee we forced them to make that wrong decision. It is so important for multiple reasons, not for the immediate, but also the longevity of a safety culture within a company. If you can't get employees buy-in, if they don't understand the why, and if they feel that you're not taking their frustrations and they mean something, then you're not going to have their buy-in for anything.
You have been putting into practice some principles from Dale Carnegie's book of How to Win Friends and Influence People, and probably didn't even realize it. But one of them that you were putting into practice is show respect for the other person's opinion. And that's what you all were doing. You say, why? Help us understand why. Two others that you put into practice is one, let the other person do a great deal of the talking. So rather than you all saying, this is it, your CEO and other people are going out and saying, hey, folks, we need to hear from you. And a final one that you've been putting into practice is try honestly to see things from the other person's point of view. Because it's really easy to use a football term to be the armchair quarterback who's saying, well, I would have done this. I would have done this. But when you're out there in the action, it's if you can find out why from them, it gives you a whole different perspective to help them. Plus makes them feel so much more valued when you do this. So you've been practicing some good things along the way.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. I try to.
Oh, yeah.
One of the things you brought up is we recently had an injury occur, an incident occur, and the understanding of the why, the context behind it. Every time our employees step up to a job, they fill out a pre-job hazard survey. And after this incident, we went back and we looked at the survey and hazards were all identified. And we took a step back and we said, what's different? They've done this task before. And we asked them, what's different today than it was yesterday? And some of the slightest things that we may not take into account sometimes make the biggest difference. We work outside and obviously, and weather plays a huge role, a huge factor in our work or our work task completion. And there's times when you look at something and you say, there's a hazard right now, it's raining outside. But do you understand how hard it started raining in the middle of the job after you've started the job? And what does that change? So talking through this incident, you look at the additional context with when we started the job, it was sprinkling out and the hazard didn't increase our risk potential enough to say, I'll stop. However, we've got most of 3/4 of the way through the job and it started downpouring. And the position the work was in, we had to continue on. And that downpour changed the outcome, the unfortunate outcome. of that situation. And I think it's important to understand that if you just took it as it was raining and you look at the pre-job and you go, something doesn't match up. But when you go out and you start talking to the employees and understanding really what went on and understanding that the torrential downpour changed everything, and then how do we, where we were, how do we move forward? So in the future, we run into this situation, what do we do so that this incident doesn't happen again?
And there you go again, practicing a principle that's ask questions instead of giving direct orders. So by taking time to ask some questions and inquire, you understood better rather than just barking out orders and do this. And just think what that does, John, for an employee. When we take enough time to inquisitively, with the spirit of curiosity and respect, ask a question to people.
Yeah, and I think that that's a key point. When I think about, you know, your approach, you know, listening to understand and not listening to respond. And, you know, when you don't engage, and I think, you know, this is all a good self-check for us. When you don't engage at that level, then you come up with half-baked ideas and then you get half-baked or less results. And so talk about a little bit your approach, because, you know, in our roles, you don't always get open communication. And so there's almost a barrier. And I would even say your role is even tougher. A couple of things. One, it's a more diverse workforce. Number two is that I think, you know, one of the things I've seen in my past is being a female in a male-dominated field as well, especially in this type of environment, can be challenging. And, you know, I don't have that perspective. I know you do. But I think that that's something that would be interesting to see how you maneuver around those things.
Yeah. So as far as from a female working in a male-dominated work environment, for me, it's still just how do you connect with the employees? How do you get their initial, we're human. The first 30 seconds you meet somebody, you're already making opinions. So how do you stop that and how do you change that opinion? And I think a big part of that is connecting with the employees, understanding where they're, who are they, right? I'm not just here to look at your work and say you did something wrong. I want to get to know you. And it goes back to that. I want to get to know you because I want to prevent you from pain, and I want to prevent your families from suffering pain and our customers from suffering pain. And without knowing who you are, I can't do that. So one of the things that me personally, I'm a pretty outdoorsy person. I love to fish. I love to hunt. I like football. I like a lot of activities that are more male activities that men do than female. So I'm able in some ways to use that to my advantage and to get them to understand that I'm not just sitting in an office making decisions. One, I want to know about you as a person. I want to know about your work. In a prior position, I worked for a manufacturing company, and it wasn't very long that I was with the company. We had an unfortunate incident, and we had a partial finger injury, amputation. I was overseeing multiple locations, and they didn't know me very well yet. So coming in after that incident, there was a lot of walls up from the plant manager to the union president to the employees on the shop floor, right? Corporate's coming in and they're here to help. They're going to figure out who did what wrong.
Oh yeah, right.
Always, always here to help.
Yeah. So coming into that environment, I had to get them to understand that I'm not here just to point blame. I'm not here to be able to go to OSHA, who obviously was in an incident investigation as we reported it. So going into it, I had multiple layers that I had to overcome and get their buy-in with it. Before anything, I went to the floor employees, invited the union representation to be there, obviously. Who was the floor manager? And did I know that his son worked on the line that this happened on? And what was he doing that weekend? What did he have plans for? Because that next week when I came back, I wanted to ask him about it to make sure that he felt that I wanted to know him as a person. He was important to me as a person. And then I just started understanding the process, not associated with the incident, but just asking people, what do you do? Why do you do that way? Right? I have no idea why. It has nothing to do with an incident, but this is what you do every day. Tell me about it. And you had the ground employees, the floor employees, be so prideful in their work. And I started to get buy-in. They started talking to me about other things that they were innovative on, that they had successes with. And I shared that with other plants and let them know that. Once I did that, it was that week. They started opening up to me about other things. Now, I don't feel that you always just give individuals whatever they ask for. Yes isn't always the answer. Humans, I believe, do like structure. And so if we told everybody yes to everything they wanted, it would be a little chaotic. But it's a give and take. And within our world, in the safety world, I think there's a lot of things that are black and white, but there's a lot of gray. And so understanding how both parties can get to that mutual agreement, to a safe situation in that gray environment, that we're both happy, is where I try to achieve a lot of the conversations that I have when there's a concern. And so started there, started working with the union leadership on the incident and letting them know that I'm going to have to ask some hard questions. I think where the company really won the situation, we won over, was whenever we allowed and encouraged the union vice president to lead the conversation with OSHA. We didn't just invite them. We brought them in as a partner. And that organization, from that day forward, after the conversation with OSHA, they helped us on everything. They helped us pilot new PPE. They helped us with new equipment designs. And we had that buy-in there. I'm not saying that it was all me that got us there, but I feel that overcoming some of those initial 30-second opinions is the toughest thing somebody has to do as a leader. And trying to connect with the different layers. And I find that connecting with the newest employee and then working my way up is where I get more of the buy-in. You have a lot of eyes watching you and those assumptions that she's just a female from corporate coming in and she's going to point blame, I think go away quicker because there's a lot of observations being done.
And what you were dealing with there was a lot of the potential for us against them type situations, which tends to be because of people's past experiences with management and leadership, tends to be the default that people go to. Oh my goodness, we better protect our own. And Elena, you use this term several times of connecting, which seems so natural for you. Yet so many people here connect with other people, and you gave some prime examples how to do that. But could you just help us in a couple, three thoughts, help us know what you're thinking about so that people that are listening to this and say, I need to be connected with my people. And that's the essential. You didn't go in guns blazing and start accusing. You connected. For those that need to get better at that, could you give us a couple tips?
Gentlemen, early on in my career, and we mentioned it earlier, but early on in my career, I had a conversation with a gentleman getting ready to retire. And I was having the conversation. I said, any tidbits for me before you retire? How can I have many years ahead of me? How can I be successful? And we spoke about it a little bit ago, but it was listen to understand, don't listen to respond. And that has stuck with me since my very early days with the utility. And I think with going into conversations with individuals with that in mind, you start building the respect for each other and you start building that open communication. So I think one is listen to understand, not listen to respond. The other is there's a fine line with becoming personal, but get to know that individual. You don't need to know that they every day or last night that they went out to dinner and what they had to eat. But a couple key points that you can remember and you can follow up with. I know that Bob is a grandfather. next time I see him, I'm going to ask him about his grandchild.
Oh, and he'll love to talk and probably like to show you some pictures if you'll let him.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I think those are the two biggest takeaways is those two items. The third item that really within this company, this organization I'm in with now, I believe I understood it a bit before, but now even more so, is when dealing with individuals from different cultures, from different backgrounds, speaking different languages, put forth an effort to understand their culture.
Thank you for that. And what we see then is when people sense that you or anybody else listening here is working to make the effort, that's a step that opens up the door, leads to partnership. But they're waiting to see if we do it, not just automatically. They're watching. And they, like you said, they watched your every movement and action with other people. They want to say, what's this person like? And John, that's so important because we're being watched all the time.
Absolutely. And I think that that's a key point. You and I talked a little bit about this, Merle, around soft skills, how we don't really like that term because, you know, as Elena is demonstrating, is they're actually critical skills or
essential skills,
right? They're not soft skills. So there's nothing soft about that. That's the lever that you need to pull in order to have these discussions. And so, Elena, I want to go only because I know a little bit about, you know, your role. I want to go in a direction around building an effective team. And so you have some recent hires and you're building out your team. Talk to me about how important it is, you know, as a health and safety executive at a VP level to make sure that your team is well-placed and well-skilled to execute that vision.
We are in a building phase. I just hired a new director of safety and human performance, and I like to take the approach that I've heard it by many is I'm trying to surround myself with much smarter people than I am. I'm trying to build that organization that I'm just here as a support. They got all the knowledge and they got all the abilities. When I take a step back, the industry that I'm in right now, there's a lot of safety going on in different ways. There's a lot of different perspectives on how safety should be implemented across the organization, across this industry. And the industry is evolving. Lewis has, coming into the company, a huge jump ahead of some nuclear facilities that I've worked at from a human performance standpoint. They have taken and implemented so many tools that are really helping our employees. One of the things, though, coming in that I realized was a lot of the safety, and I'm not saying everybody has to have a degree in safety to be a safety professional, but is how do we develop our organizations? If you have a safety organization that is very skills and knowledge based on how to perform the work, but understanding the other side of things, such as the regulatory, the why, as we talked earlier, there's a why with a regulatory side of it too, and understanding why those regulatory standards are in place and how they can help us. So right now we are growing our safety organization within Lewis and we focused this past year and continuing to focus on development of the safety organization we have in place right now. We have about 30 safety specialists out in the field across our work geographic area. And with them is the continuous development of them. I've been very excited since coming into Lewis. They're very supportive of this, not just within the safety organization, but as a company. Last year, from our general four persons up through our CEO, all took an OSHA 10-hour class. That as much as possible, that remaining within the rules of the OSHA outreach program was directed more to our industry. But who can go out there? There's not many CEOs that are willing to participate in that, or COOs and presidents and our RVPs. Our safety organization, some of them had an OSHA 30. We brought everybody together and refreshed or provided that. It's just that first step to say, here's where we're building and growing.
What a intriguing message that is sent and ripples down to the people throughout your organization. This organization cares and wants me to be better. This organization is willing to invest time and dollars in me. That speaks louder than we care. It's in action. There was another statement that you said a bit earlier there, we're going to go back to a principle, where you talked about the regulations and you tried to say, rather than being mumbling, grumbling, and complaining like, you said, but wait a minute, what's behind this regulation? What's the why? And one of the principles is of Carnegie, do not criticize, condemn, or complain. And you all took that a different mindset rather than grumbling about the regulation. Well, wait a minute. Why is it there? How could it benefit if we work on it? And that is so important as people watch your leaders. Because what happens and what have you seen? When the leaders grumble, what does that do to the people? When the leaders respond with a different attitude, what difference does that make? Would you comment on that a bit?
Yeah. So I had a former supervisor of mine, and I liked working in the nuclear industry. And in the nuclear industry, it was, here's this box, figure out how to get the work done with all these constraints. And that excited me. He despised it. And so where I am now is taking a look at from his perspective and seeing how without that box, achieving success versus where I like to be in that constraints and achieving success is now I'm in that outside of that box. And it's getting others to understand that these requirements are out there, and where it's not a forceful, try not to take the approach, you must comply black and white with this statement, but taking the approach more of the, okay, there is a gray area. It doesn't have to be black. It doesn't have to be white based on how the standard is written. How is that successful for us? How do we remain compliant, make our work safer? Their terms, we have less incidents and less injuries. To your point, if we have leadership and they start grumbling about it, if I have safety supervisors in the field that don't truly believe the direction that Lewis is going, we're not going to be successful. And the biggest thing that I've tried to do since I've come on board is continuously say, if you don't agree with this, if you're not aligned, if you have questions on the why, let's talk about it. Please come to me and let's have the conversation. Because once we get out in the field, obviously, if my safety group is not aligned and they're boo-hooing on regulatory standards, ANSI requirements, whatever they might be, we're not going to have success. And that goes the same with operations. I also try and push that operations has to drive a lot of the safety expectations. They're the ones who pay the paychecks of the guys out and climbing our trees. If it's important to our safety leadership out there, it's going to be important for them. If they're out reviewing pre-jobs that our crews have completed and there's area for improvement, then they need to say there's an area for improvement, because those crews then know it's important and it's going to be important for them. They're going to understand and learn the why. If their direct supervisor, their direct leader is talking to them about, hey, you missed this, you could mitigate this hazard a better way, that's going to resonate with that employee and they're going to look for that in the future. But if I have a leader who's out there and they see something wrong and they turn and walk the other way, they just told those employees it was okay. It was okay to violate that rule, that requirement, that standard that's in place to protect them. And we can't do that. We have to, what we say is important needs to be important all the time.
Because what you permit, you're promoting, correct? And Elena, you are helping to remind all of us and everybody that's listening, there are so many little and subtle things that either promote or drag down the safety direction and the culture. And we always, it's the big things, the big things. It's usually the subtle things that people are watching that are making such a massive difference.
Yeah. And I think for me, you know, what I take from that is openness generates solutions. And as you think about how you approach that and the ops engagement, so we talked a little bit about that rocket fuel. So there's a lot of people listening saying, man, I wish I had that CEO rocket fuel, have that passion, because I don't know if my leader is in that same spot. But what I'd be curious to is around, you know, sometimes that cascading rocket fuel dilutes as it moves down the chain, right? And so it may not be as intense as it is in the top as it makes its way through an organization. And when you think about what you just mentioned around ops, how does your approach to ops maintain that rocket fuel?
That's such a good point. We have this conversation quite often. As we play telephone with messages, as kids, we played telephone. I think we were on here, we're at an age we didn't have cell phones at the very young age. So we played telephone. I said one thing and how did it end up at the end of the line? And we have this conversation with our leadership quite often. And it's that validate, trust but verify what is going on at the ground level. Our organization really pushes for us to be in the field. And that's all levels. That's all departments. Get out in the field. That's where our company is successful. That's the only reason our company is where we are today, because we're able to do the work. So get out and learn who our guys on the ground and gals on the ground, who they are. And along with that is trust but verify what message is there. We have weekly tailgates that go out. And those have conversations across all the crews. And so when we have leadership out in the field, maybe it is a division manager, is going out and having that conversation with the trimmer. What was the tailgate on this week? To make sure that the message is the same, clear down to the guy who is the newest on the crew. So we continuously try and do the trust but verify to keep that energy going. The other thing that we do is we do safety ride-alongs. There are safety ride-alongs occurring monthly, quarterly, at all levels of the organization, up and through our president, our CEO. It is a full day with the safety representative. A division manager is spending an entire day with one of our safety supervisors or one of our safety specialists to try and re-energize and bring up the successes that we are having and also some areas for improvement that are out there. But I think that continuous engagement between safety and operations has to happen. If it doesn't, if it fails and it goes away, then that rocket fuel is gone. We don't have any of that, any of those people out there re-energizing and saying, look, here's how we can prevent more incident.
Yeah. And here's what I would say is what a novel concept around we talk safety, understanding operations, but we always don't necessarily get operations understanding safety. And so as you build that partnership, which clearly you have, making sure you're continuing to promote a two-way stream of communication versus singular in any one direction, whether it's all ops, all safety, or in between. And so I don't know, Merle, what do you think about the importance of that two-way communication?
Well, what we've been hearing here, and Elena, your folks, you got to get out and about. But whether it's just getting out and about and in the wilderness among the trees out there, or if it's just getting out of the office and walking out on a plant floor, or if it's with truck drivers or in that type of industry, get out where the people live, because they need to see your presence. They need to see your support. You folks are giving a lot of support to people and taking time to become genuinely interested in who they are. That sends a message. But once you get out there and see what it's really like, oh, it's a whole new world rather than what you think it is. And it is so vital. So get out of our offices, get away from behind the laptop and the cool or warmth of the office, and hit the streets or get out, get with the people.
That's right. If you don't know the work, how can you help?
What words of encouragement could you have to folks who are listening about needing someone to guide them in their life?
Yeah, I think that's been huge for my career. I was very fortunate to have a mentor who gave me opportunity to both fail and succeed. I don't think that we become successful by never failing. We learn from those opportunities. But I had a mentor who would put me in situations that it was sink or swim, but he wouldn't let me completely fail to a point of I don't want to be in safety anymore. And I think that's important, is find a mentor, find somebody that you can go to and who's going to push you. If you just sit back and wait for somebody to grab your hand and say, come along with me, let me teach you, I don't believe you're going to be very happy within the safety career path with that mentor that's going to help you see opportunities out there and let you learn, let you experience different environments, let you experience different areas of the OSHA regulatory standards for you to learn, and give you that opportunity to learn how to talk with employees at all levels of the organization. I think one is finding that mentor that really will help you along the path is important.
And it sounds like you're really suggesting the idea of taking the initiative and not just wait until the person just miraculously floats into my life. But what do you think is best? How do you find this person?
So I think one is taking the initiative. And it kind of goes back to that sit to listen to understand versus listen to respond. And don't just knee-jerk reaction and find the first safety leader and go, will you be my mentor? But really find that person who you connect with and that you aspire, you have some aspiration to aspire to their role. But taking the initiative will in two ways. One, taking initiative in a career path. If you don't take initiative, you're going to be left behind.
Yes.
I had a colleague who got very frustrated and left an organization. And when you asked why, it was, well, they didn't tell me this. They didn't provide this. They didn't give me this. And you said, well, did you say anything? Did you take any initiative for yourself and say and ask the questions about it? Well, no. I believe that you have to take initiative for what you want your future to look like. I think that's a big piece of anybody's career path, but find the mentor that you want and ask them to help lead you is very important.
And I think your thought there too, your idea, it doesn't mean like, this is not the best analogy, but it's not like on the first date you ask somebody to marry you, but it's just like, well, could we just have a bite of lunch or have some coffee and just talk? And you start to feel it. Do I really think this person could guide me? Would they want to guide me? Do they have what I need? And maybe you do that for a time or two, and then you work to make it a bit more formal. But don't feel like you've got to do it immediately type thing.
Yeah, and I think it takes a couple of shapes. No, I was just going to say, as I'm listening to you, I think about one ahead, one behind. Which is, you know, you're learning, but you're also teaching, and you have a very clear passion around this. And so you are seeking to learn, but I've also heard how you continue to teach. And I think it seems like that's been very effective for you.
I want to flip it to also us on the call and others who are in those safety leaderships a little further along in their career is don't be blind for the ones that are taking initiative. So when you see someone taking initiative, maybe say, hey, do you want to have lunch?
Yeah.
So I think it's on both sides is being aware of who you have around you and being aware of who are those that are taking initiatives. I worked with a gentleman a couple years back, and he was new and into the safety field. And there was just something about him. He had a spark. He had an energy, and he's got a long way to go, but my goodness, I was so excited to work with him. And so I just put that out there also for us who are in those positions. When you see a spark with somebody, when you see somebody trying to take initiative, what you permit, you promote. Don't just turn around and walk away, but take that and put that rocket fuel for that person's career and try and help them as well, I think.
Now, Elena, you've been safety pro for over 20 years. What do you do to help you keep sharp, to keep that spark within you and not to just, I know it, and get stale? I fear sometimes that people that have been in the role get kind of worn down, beat down a little bit, and they need to be able to keep being renewed to keep going forward. What thoughts could you give us on that?
Yeah, I think one is conferences. It's hard to step away from work, but going and hearing speakers, and it, you don't have to go to a conference. You don't have to go to a large conference, but going to your local ASSP chapter meetings, going to, you can go to one of the national conferences or a state safety congress meeting, and hearing others talk about it. You know, when any of us are up there speaking, if we get that opportunity, there's some spark in there. And I think that energizes new ideas and opportunities for those individuals who are in the crowd and listening. So going to those, I think, are very important. There's networking. I think that continuously building your network within the field that you're in is important. I think that you're always able to learn from each other, and you hear different things that they're doing in different industries and go, well, why can't I bring that to here? Yeah. Coming to the vegetation management company that I, with Lewis, it was, some people were hesitant. She doesn't work in this industry. She's never worked in industry. What does she know about climbing? Well, I didn't know a lot about climbing, but I knew quite a bit about fall protection. I knew quite a bit about different tools that might help us keep our employees safe. And it's a different outlook. So I think not just networking within the industry you're in, but networking with other industries to see their best practices and ask not, you know, that doesn't apply to me, but ask, can it apply to me? Could that help us? I think is where I get energized and excited with those new ideas.
I mean, I couldn't agree more. I think that that's great advice. A lot of times we do stay kind of in our industry and we get stale. And so I think that that's great advice and for folks listening.
And I would just encourage everybody that's listening, what's your plan? What's your course of actions? What is one thing you'll do to step up and not get so mellow that you lose your edge? Who are you going to reach out to? What are you going to read? Where are you going to go? Take some definite specific act, so that the people around you, again, who are watching you, say, he's not just stale, she's not stale, there's life that's there. So, Elena, our time is about done, but this has been such an intriguing conversation. I'm going to ask you in just a moment to be thinking about what words of encouragement would you like to wrap up with for those that are listening? What challenge advice would you give that perhaps you wish somebody had given you or that you just believe would be appropriate for now? We'd be honored to hear from you.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is don't settle for less. Don't be afraid and go for it. You don't know what you can do until you try it.
Yes.
And we're going to fail, but we learn from those failures. So don't be afraid and shoot for the stars.
Great.
Yeah, great advice. And so I would just wrap up and say, make that call today. Someone's on your mind right now. And if they can teach you something or you think you can teach them something, go ahead and pick up that phone today.
And thank you so much for sharing your experiences, life experiences with us.
Thank you. It was a pleasure speaking with you today.
John, the energy you felt as she talked, as she spoke from her heart, from her soul. A couple thoughts that stood out, quick statements. One, it's give and take. It's not just take, take, take. Role of safety leader has to give at times, take at times, and back and forth. And the other thing she said at the very end, go for it. Go for it. Quit being so hesitant. Go after things.
Yeah, I love the energy. And it, you can exude it right off the screen. Her comment around you have 30 seconds to make that impression was transformative for me, because I don't think we always get visibility around that. And, you know, when she said, what you permit, you promote, that was really big, because people are always watching, and something to consider.
Thanks for listening to My Big Safety Challenge, a podcast produced in partnership by Dale Carnegie and BCSP, with your host, Dale Carnegie Master Trainer Merle Heckman, and John Fisher, Director of Environmental Strategy and Corporate EHS at Duke Energy Corporation. Executive produced by Joel Bergai, directed by Giachi Liu, edited by Jared Grio and Kyla Anderson. Editorial support from Brandon Mohaupt. Social media support from Braylon Morgan. Consulting producers are Colin Brown and Mark Sullivan. To have new episodes delivered directly to you, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded. If you'd like to share your story of a safety leadership challenge you faced, email us at info@mybigsafetychallenge.com. See you next time.